to minute 58 of the Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast, where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and unfortunately, Tom isn't able to make it this week. He's still in the cooler, but hopefully he'll be back next week. But joining me today is award-winning documentary director Dana Nachman. Welcome back, Dana.
Hi, thank you for having me again.
Yeah, yeah, this has been a great week so far. You've pointed out a lot of things as a director that I would never have thought of myself. So hopefully you'll be able to enlighten me and our listeners to some more interesting things that go on behind the scenes in the way that you make movies like this one.
Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, you'll be happy to know that I was at a barbecue with friends the other day, and we were talking about movies that family likes. And my friend said, "We just got finished watching The Great Escape." And I said, "Oh, well, I have recently taken a very deep dive into The Great Escape." And she said her kids loved it. And I was actually scared to watch it with my kids because I thought it was a little long for them. But she said, "No, they totally hung with it." So now I'm going to do that as a family movie night soon.
All right. That's great. That's excellent.
Yes.
That's what we want. We want more people to see this movie and to get more of an appreciation for it because it's such a fun, family-friendly movie, but it's also, you know, even adults can enjoy it even more. You know, if you just watch
Definitely.
It over and over.
Yes.
Yeah. That's great to hear. I'm really happy to hear that you're just bumping into people at barbecues and the topic of The Great Escape is coming up. That's great.
Yes.
All right. So Minute 58 begins with Cavendish looking at Frick suspiciously as they continue to carol. Goes all the way till Henley approaches Werner, who is staring out the window. Basically, this minute continues the way that the minute ended yesterday, where we have a number of POWs that are singing Christmas carols in late spring, early summer, in order to hide the fact that Sedgwick and his manufacturers are building some very interesting things, like an air pump and things like that. Basically, you know, we have the German guard Frick walk by, and we have Cavendish continue to motion to everyone in the way that they should do their singing in order to keep on the beat, the way that everyone's working on the inside. Then the shot shifts to showing us the inside again, so we see Sedgwick and four of his men pounding away on tin cans. The door opens and Roger and Mac show up. And Roger, as always, you know, the managerial Roger, wants to know why his air pump isn't ready yet. So the first thing that I found very interesting here is when he walks in, he actually calls Sedgwick by his first name. This is the first time that we get to hear that his name is Louis. So he goes, "Louis, where the hell is the air pump?" And what fascinates me about this is up until now, all the characters are referring to each other by their last names. No one has ever... besides the scene earlier this week where we have, you know, Mac and Henley approaching one another, we're dealing with all the goodies and things like that. Besides that, no one has really been referring to each other by their first names. So this is just a way for them to, I guess, give more of, develop the character a little more. Just, you know, he's not just Sedgwick, he's Louis Sedgwick, which, I don't know, I think it actually takes a little bit away from it because by calling him Louis, I think it brings... What you think of his character down a little bit by the way that he says it.
Yeah, and also he's bossing him around, so you would think that he would have a more kind of commander, you know, authoritative. It seems a little like not a time for it to be so informal.
Right. Well,
a little,
I mean,
strange.
True, but the response that Sedgwick gives is patience is a virtue, Roger, which also isn't the type of response that someone would normally give to their commander. I mean, obviously, they're playing it very loose with the way that the command structure works here. But, I mean, everyone knows that Roger is big X and Roger's the one in charge. But still, to snap back and say to him, patience is a virtue is...
Flip.
Yeah, exactly. And now, the way that Roger responds is, he goes, "Okay, I know, but the diggers can only work when the traps open." So... I think this dialogue is a great way for them to let us understand what's going on here. We don't have to see the fact that when they're digging, they need to keep the trapdoors open so that they have more air and stuff like that. But just this phrase tells us that that's what's really going on, which obviously it adds to the danger of everything. If you're, you know, you can't hide underground if the trapdoor is open. You know, anyone who walks in is going to see that the trapdoor is there. And if you close it, then everyone's... you know, going to lose whatever little air they had there. So, of the air pump that he pulls out.
Yeah.
So, So again, this is a very large closet. It does make one wonder why the guards would never have noticed that there's this extra space here.
Right.
You know, if they walk into the room, they should notice that, okay, that this wall is, you know, like what's supposed to be behind this wall.
Yeah.
And they do it really well. And again, what Cedric's basically doing here is explaining to the audience the whole idea of the air pump, and that the reason that the air pump itself is done, but what's not done are the air ducts, and that's what they're working on. You know, so they explain that they basically are telling us that what these characters are doing by banging all these tin cans is they're creating air ducts.
Right.
Which is, again, it's fascinating to think about the fact that they actually thought to do all these different things in order to make the escape possible.
Right.
You know, it wouldn't necessarily be the first thing that I would think of is, okay, how are we going to create an air duct?
Right. And how are we going to create noise? Yeah.
You say, how am I going to breathe? But you're not necessarily going to think about the fact that, okay, so let's create something really, let's create something that is going to be able to take over and, you know, and allow us to do this. Right. So the fact that we get to see how the air ducts are being made is great. I mean, they do that really well here. And that helps establish what's really going on.
Yes, it's very cool.
And so then the conversation between Cedric and Roger continues. You know, Roger at this point says, "Well, he basically says, I know that you're working hard, but still, I need it. When's it going to be done?" And he says, "Oh, it'll take me another day or two." And as we'll see in a day or two, you know, it still isn't ready. But that's giving away a little bit of spoilers here. You know,
yes,
that's the way these things work with when you're dealing with someone like Sedgwick. You know, he's apparently very busy with everything that he needs to do. And you know, and then Roger's next question is, okay, well, does it work? And you know, Cedric says, "Ah, of course it works." There's, you know, and he starts showing him how good it is. Well, oh, okay, will it give us enough air? So then, you know, again, this is all exposition for the viewer. You know, it's to show us that, mm-hmm. that they're not just, it's not just a prop. They're actually creating something that's going to make things more useful and more helpful to the prisoners as, you know, as they're digging away and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, I think what you're always trying to do in any film, and this one has so much opportunity to do it, is to up the stakes. So, you know, is there going to be enough air? Is like, I mean, that's pretty, if there's stakes anywhere, it's with having enough air to breathe, right? So, like, the constant reminders of that could be in jeopardy is, you know, you almost take every opportunity to do that.
Right. Actually, that's a good point. They're basically planting the seed that, okay, there could be a problem with air. You know,
exactly.
Something we never would have probably thought of without them having to mention it. I mean, later on, you have the whole claustrophobia aspect of digging in the tunnels that they deal with, but they never really touch upon the fact that they might run out of air. Besides the fact that what they're doing here is telling us, okay, you know, pay attention. This could be potentially a problem.
Yeah, it's like a foreshadowing or planting a seed of that. And I just have to say, even though it's not my part, I do have claustrophobia myself, and even watching those scenes in the tunnel made me feel claustrophobic.
Okay, so you mean it's a good thing that you're not stuck in Stalag Luft
3? Oh my God.
And that you're going to be, in other words, you'll be one of the ones to volunteer and say, "I'll do all the work on the outside, but I'm staying here."
Exactly. I was even just telling my husband the other day, I was like, you know, just in case I'm ever stuck in a trunk of a car or something, I should probably deal with the claustrophobia. He's like, "What, you think you're going to lose your keys in your car and get stuck?" I'm like, "I don't know. You just never know."
And if you lose your keys in the trunk, don't climb into the trunk. That's
exactly.
Word to the wise. And make sure there's no one around who's going to push you in.
Tunnels, like, I'd just rather stay in the camp, I think.
Yeah, but you've now also planted the seed in your husband's mind that if he ever decides he wants to get rid of you.
I know, he'll know how to do it. There's many, many ways.
Exactly. So if we hear a story that Dana Nachman was found in the trunk, we know who to.
Yeah, you have some. What do you call that? Testimony and evidence. Exactly. That you could provide.
Well, actually, now that everyone who's listening to this is now a suspect.
Because yeah,
now
exactly.
Everyone knows. It's not just.
Oh no.
No, that's actually good because it means that people might be, you know, might be deterred to do it because.
Oh, true.
You know.
That's one way to look at it.
Of course, you have to. every situation in life, you have to find the spin on it and how to look at it from a good perspective. You don't always have to look at it from a bad perspective.
Yes.
And then Roger basically tells him, all right, you're doing a great job, and make sure that you get it done by tomorrow night, which, again, he's not going to, but, the typical manager, telling you when you need to get it done by, whether you're going to do it or not, that's a separate issue.
And didn't he, earlier say, 1 or 2 days or something, and then now he's, upping the time period?
Yeah, he said it'll take about a day or two. No, but once you say it's going to take a day or two, so you're saying that there is the possibility that it can take a day.
Yeah, so do it tomorrow.
It's not as if he says, okay, it's going to take me, it'll take me at least a week. So, if he were to say it's going to take me a week, and then right after that he's told, okay, get it ready by tomorrow.
Yeah, always give yourself
overestimate,
extra time.
Overestimate.
Yes, always.
Completely.
Then you're the hero, right? When you come in early.
That's right.
It's the way to go.
That's what I do with work. When someone tells me
that's what I do.
Exactly. If they tell you how long is it going to take, it can take me a lot longer than that. And first of all, if you get it done by then, that's great. And if you don't, then okay, you still have a little bit of leeway to try to get it done afterwards.
Exactly.
I love the shot right after Roger walks out of the room. You get a fraction of a second seeing the smirk on Cedric's face as they leave. Now, this smirk can be interpreted in so many different ways. Is he saying, yeah, right, I'm not going to get it done by tomorrow night, keep dreaming? Or is he saying, is he very pleased with the work that he's done and that's what he's doing?
I think the two options in my mind are that he either is thinking, what a blowhard that guy is, but I think it's more likely that he's thinking, oh, shoot, we got to get this done. I'm nervous.
Well, he doesn't look nervous because he's smirking.
I think he does at the very end. It turns into, look at it. And he knocks his hand on the table. I think he seems like...
So he's sort of saying to himself, all right, how am I going to get it done by tomorrow night?
Yes, that's what I think.
Even though, again, he doesn't. But that's a separate issue. This whole scene takes 30 seconds or 40 seconds or whatever it is, and it's just done so well because they're
so much stuff.
They're able to give us so much detail and so much information about everything that's going on just in that short little time span.
Yes.
And I mean, a lot of people look at this movie and they say, wow, it's a 3-hour movie and stuff like that, but it's filled with so much information and it's not very repetitive. Which makes it even more fascinating to be watching, because everything that you're watching, you're gaining more and more knowledge about everything that's going on, and you're not saying, oh, well, they already mentioned that before.
Nope.
Because a lot of people say, oh, a 3-hour movie, they should have cut it down a little bit, but this is further proof that, they packed so much into those 3 hours that there was no place for them to cut it down because of the way that they built up this whole story.
Yeah.
It's
a lot.
Yeah, it really is. So then we move on to the next scene where we get to see Henley. First we see Werner, the German guard, looking out the window, staring out into space. I don't know what he's looking at. Is he looking at the trees? Is he looking at the prisoners doing some sort of, menial work? Is he looking at the Christmas carolers? You never know. But then, from behind, you see that Henley, James Garner, comes into the room. It's really funny because he looks like he's on the prowl the way that
he comes
into this room,
And maybe it's because he's lighting a cigarette. Yeah.
He's in the process of lighting a cigarette and walking into the room and basically trying to we know what his plan is. His plan is to try to bribe or blackmail Werner at some point with, all the goodies that he was given and stored away in his locker, a few minutes ago, a few days ago. But the motion that Gardner uses here is just great because he's acting as if you could take that, his movements, and put him into any romantic comedy or even just, a drama. And he'd be doing the exact same thing. He's approaching a woman at a bar. He's approaching, a woman at a party, looking out the window, that type of thing.
Yeah, and I think you half wonder, I think it's a cigarette lighting, but it's just the way he looks. He's such a Casanova type that, no matter what he does, he kind of looks like that.
Exactly.
And then coupled with the lighting of the cigarette and the way he's standing, it's like, is he going to hit on him or what?
Right, exactly. And like you said, he puts the cigarette in his mouth and it's like hanging, it's dangling from his, from his lips. It's not as if it's even something, he's not already starting to smoke. He's planning his move. He's about to make a move on Werner. Not necessarily in a seductive way, but, you know, he puts the cigarette in his mouth and walks over to him to try to...
He wants to make sure that there's enough smoke and smell so that it's enticing him even more to want one.
Exactly. And that's basically how this minute ends. Tomorrow we'll have more to talk about with this scene. Do you have anything else you wanted to say about this minute, Dana?
No, it was a good one.
All right, great. So you want to tell people once again how they can get in touch with you?
Sure. They could find me at my website, Dana Nachman, N-A-C-H-M-A-N. They can find my films there and get in touch with me, anything they want.
All right, great. And while you're doing that, you can go rate and review and subscribe on any podcatcher that you might be using to listen to this podcast. You can join our Facebook group at The Cooler. Our website's thegreatescapeminute.com. Our email address is thegreatminute@gmail.com. And our Twitter account is greatescapemxm. So, Dana, you want to come back in tomorrow?
Sure.
All right. Excellent. So, till tomorrow. Tally-ho.
Tally-ho.